2 weeks before Christmas in the year 2000, the Baltimore Sun wrote an article about a Rhodes Scholar named Wes Moore. And it was a remarkable story about a young man who had made absolutely remarkable accomplishments in his life because he was born into a very poor neighborhood in Boston, and a very difficult neighborhood in Boston. And while he was still a young man, at the age of 3, his father died from cancer. And his mother, left penniless, didn't know what she wanted to do with this young family. And so she went and moved in with her parents, who were still in this Boston neighborhood. Now, apparently, Wes was quite a difficult young child. And the mother wanted to do everything that she could possibly do to give the best for her son. And so she enrolled her son into a private school. She scraped together, she did everything she could to enroll her son, and he got there. But what he saw was an incredible disconnect between the incredible wealth at this school that he was going to that was not in his neighborhood, and he'd come home in the afternoon and see the incredible poverty that he lived in. And the school didn't seem to do anything about the discipline problem that was going in Wes's life. And he was still heading down the wrong path, and his mother still didn't know what to do. And so she went one step further, and she enrolled young Wes in a military academy, Valley Forge Military Academy, where finally, where he was there at the academy, the people at that academy drilled into him respect and honor. And he graduated from this military academy, Phi Theta Kappa, Valley Forge Military College in 1998. And then he received a Rhodes Scholarship, and he went to Johns Hopkins University, graduating from there. And then after leaving from Johns Hopkins University, he entered the Army and was a paratrooper in the 82nd Airborne 2006, but then his career was still going because at the young age of 30, this young man who started out in such a difficult, impoverished lifestyle was then asked to be a speaker at the 2008 Democratic National Convention at Invesco Field with thousands and thousands and thousands of people listening to his story. It's a remarkable story from rags to riches. It's a remarkable story of a young man and a young family, both mothers and parents and grandparents, who are willing to invest everything into this young man to give him every opportunity that they possibly could. But during that same time, the Baltimore Sun was also running a series of articles about some young men from Boston, the same neighborhood, who were on trial and would likely be convicted of murder and go to prison for the murder of a police officer in Baltimore. And as would have it, one of the young men mentioned in the newspaper went by the name of Wes Moore. And the other Wes Moore, the one that spoke in front of Invesco Stadium, this free Wes Moore, he saw that name in the newspaper, he saw the situation, and he realized that this was very strange. And he went over to Germany to do something. I believe he was giving a presentation. And the whole time he was flying over there, giving the presentation and flying back, he simply had to know more about this other Wes Moore. Now, I can completely understand this because, as you would know, or you may not know this, there's another David Hook. There is. And I would get phone calls for people looking for the other David Hook when I was living in Phoenix. And this was, of course, long before internet. People would call and they would say, "Is this David Hook?" And I'd say, "Yes." "Are you the musician?" And I'd say, "Yes." And they'd say, "Do you go to Grand Canyon College?" And I'd say, "Well, no." "Well, there's another David Hook who's a musician. He's at Grand Canyon College. And I've always wanted to meet this guy. And our paths have come so close for the last 48 years. I think he's still in Phoenix. I think he's still associated with Grand Canyon College. I've never met the guy." But you want to do this. If you're somebody with your name, I mean, some of you may have this. If there's somebody with your name, that you want to know their story, who they are. And apparently Westmore, coming back, he finally decided, you know what? I know he's in prison. I'm going to write him a letter. So he comes back, and he sits down, and he writes a letter to this other Westmore, thinking that nothing may ever come of it. But then, surprisingly enough, he gets a response from Westmore and finds out more about this young man and found out some uncanny differences. For example, both of them had very, very difficult childhoods. They were both fatherless. They were both having trouble in the classroom. And this is really weird. They'd hung out on similar street corners, and they'd hung out with similar people. And they were only 2 years difference, and yet they both had run into trouble with the police. And yet, at every stage, an important stage in their life, the one Westmore had made good decisions, and the other one had made poor decisions. He says in his book, yet at each stage of our lives, at similar moments of decisions, we would head down different paths towards astonishingly different destinies. And Westmore, as he interviewed this young man, he went to prison 12 times to interview this man, over 12 times. He went and visited with the family members. He wanted to find out everything about this Westmore, to find out why it was that this Westmore was able to go so far and this Westmore was stuck in prison. And he wrote a book about it. The book is called The Other Westmore. And he says this in the book. He didn't realize that their two stories was a much larger tale about the consequences of personal responsibility and the imperativeness of education and the imperativeness of a community for a generation of boys searching for their own way. Today's gospel lesson, I'm sure you've heard it before many, many times. It's a fantastic vision that Jesus paints of what it's going to be like on the last day. When the trumpets shall sound and all the dead shall rise and everybody living or dead shall now be at the throne of God. And then judgment happens. And at judgment day, if you read Matthew, a judgment that is very severe because the Lord is going to separate. On his right, he's going to put the sheep. And on his left, he's going to put the goats. And he's going to go to the sheep and he's going to say, bless you, for you did the things that I asked you to do. You took my gospel message to the world. You helped those people that were in need. You made a change to the culture. Blessed are you, and you can enter into righteousness. But then he'll turn to the ones on his left and he'll say, cursed are you, because you were given so much. You had so much opportunity and yet you failed. And you shall go into everlasting damnation. If you heard this story many, many, many times, it's a chilling account. Because the only reason that separates the sheep and the goat is what? What they did or what they didn't do. Now, I listen to that story, and I get a little nervous. Because I know that I've been redeemed by Christ the crucified. I'm one of his, but I look at my life and I look at the things that are happening in this world and I say, am I truly a sheep? Or maybe I'm a goat. Do I really follow God's calling to do whatever I can to bring about his kingdom in this world? Or do I sit on my thumbs and do absolutely nothing? We live in a very, very beautiful community, Vale. We have and Rita Ranch, for those of you, and Corona did too. Okay, we live in southern Tucson. Wherever we live, it's a beautiful community. And we don't really see what happens. But I know that there's poverty. I know that there's injustice. I know that there's illiteracy. I had a meeting with Trish Pena a while back, and she said the number one thing that she's concerned about on this campus right here is drug and alcohol abuse. Because when people are given money and they have access to money, some kids take that money and they go do terrible things. And yet, what are we as a church doing about it? We say, well, Boston, I mean, that's so far away. I mean, we don't care about that. We care about our community. But so many people in our community, they look around and they say, yeah, everything looks fine. Everything's okay. You know, the yards are maintained. And the letters from the Homeowners Association have come out, so we know that the yards are going to be maintained. and we live in our picture-perfect neighborhood, and we kind of hide ourselves from some of the deep problems that exist under the surface of even our community in Vail. We don't even have to go to Boston to see what it's all about. I want you to listen to the words that Jesus is talking about, because we are not off the hook. Because what Jesus is saying in these words is to go deeper than simply paying your taxes and hiding yourself to what needs to be done in a community, because the call of Jesus in a community is so much greater than that. Listen to what he says to the people at Judgment Day. I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. But listen to this next one. I was a stranger and you invited me in. How many of us would feel comfortable inviting a stranger into our house? I was naked and you clothed me. Or this one that really hits me. I was sick and in prison and had nothing. No visitors, no family. I had nothing. And you came and you visited me. It's a call not to just simply throw money at the problem and say, let somebody else deal with it. It's a call to God's people to get involved in people's lives, to make a change in the culture, to make a change in your life, to make a change in somebody else's life. And it happens when we, God's church, do it one-on-one. And we get involved in people's life. That's the calling that Jesus Christ calls us to. Because let me tell you something. Changing a person's life isn't just simply going in and working with that person. Changing a person's life means going and looking and changing the whole entire culture that comes across from it. There's a story that I absolutely love. It's a video. I've shown it to the confirmation class. And it's with Mark Hamill and Timothy Tyler Thomas. It's called A Walk Across Egypt. And it's about a boy who's in prison. And this lady, this church lady, finds out that the boy's in prison. And she's living by herself. Every night she plays the piano, sings some hymns. But for some reason, when she's lying in bed one night, she realizes that when God says, go visit people in prison, maybe that talks to her. And so she goes and she starts visiting this young boy in prison and makes an incredible, incredible change, not only in herself, but in the young boy. And basically, at the end of the movie, you find out because of what she did, she has actually saved this young man's life. It's an incredible story. That's the level of commitment that Jesus wants from Christians, is to simply get involved in other people's lives and to change a community, to change this world for the gospel of Jesus Christ. But the words of God still haunt me, because he says, if you're not doing those things, then you're going to be cursed into eternal fire. And I say to myself, but Lord, I'm doing as much as I can. I can't do everything. How do I know if I've done enough? But I want you to listen to the words again, because they're words of gospel. If you go to verse 37, when the righteous are answering Jesus, listen carefully to what they're saying. He says, then the righteous will come and they'll answer Jesus and they'll say this, what? Oh, Lord, we did everything that we possibly could. No, the righteous, they say, Lord, when did we see you hungry or feed you or thirsty or give you something to drink? And when did we see you a stranger and invite you in or needing clothes or clothed you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you? And the king will reply, tell you the truth, whatever you did to one of the least of these my brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. You see, the righteous didn't even know that they were doing the things that God wanted them to do. They were simply being obedient to God and obedient to what he had called them to do in this world. You see, you and I, we're the righteous. We've been redeemed and sanctified by Jesus. At the end of the day, we're the sheep. But we do what we do, even though we have absolutely no idea what the implications are for that. I think about the property that we purchased, we're putting up buildings, and how that's going to be there long after I'm gone, long after you're gone, still doing ministry in the Vail area. And I know that in 10, 20, 50, 100 years, that God will still be using that property, that church, and that community of people to make a change, to be His kingdom and His light in the Vail community. We don't know the things that we're doing and how they're impacting God's kingdom, but we know that they are, because all things work for good for God, for those who love God and are called according to His purpose. All things work for good. God takes the resources that He's given us, and He makes them work for His good. One of the most chilling accounts in the story that he wrote, the Westmore, and I read the book, I couldn't put it down, was the other Westmore, the one that is in prison now. When he was a young man, probably 12 to 14 years old, he had been fatherless, he'd been living on the street, he had a mom, and he had a brother and some family, but he basically was on his own. And somehow he found out that his father was still alive. And he kind of knew he had a stepbrother, and he talked to the stepbrother, and he said, yeah, your father still is alive. He said, would you like to meet him? Well, the other Westmore, he was delighted. He couldn't believe it. Finally, he gets to meet his father. This was a big thing for him. So he goes with his brother, and they walk two blocks to the house where his father had been living his whole life. And they knock on the door, and they go inside. And his father didn't want to have anything to do with them and shoved him out the door. And so the dejected Westmore left home with the one hope of finally having somebody in his life that would care for him, that would deal with him. Those hopes were dashed. And you think that just simply helping Westmore is going to solve the problem, but the fact is, it's a cultural shift. You talk to any teacher today in any public school, and they will say, the problems that I see in the classroom are cultural. They're systemic. They're deep. I can deal with what I can in the classroom, but this society, we need to deal with it as a societal level. And see, that's where the church comes in, because we know the answer to the world's problems. We know what the solution is to the Westmores of the life. And how is it that we know that? Because we were fatherless. We were the ones that come knocking on the door. We're the ones that said, let us in. And God said, of course I'll let you in. You're my chosen people. I love you. And He loves you with everything that He possibly can. And when He does that, that love that overflows His church, the love that overflows us, that gives us the strength and the power and the courage to go and to spread that love to the community around us. That's what God's called us to do, so that there are no other Westmores in our community, that our culture would see the light of Jesus Christ, the love of a true Father in this world today. So there are no other Westmores. In Jesus' name, amen.